You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
My name is Ali Casaza, and I am here to normalize moms living their dream lives and helping them create it too. I'm a mom of four, a number one best-selling author, a self-made multi-seven-figure entrepreneur, and the curator of transformational online spaces for moms. I am all about helping you design a life and a motherhood of enjoyment, pleasure, and ease. All words that are so rarely associated with being a mom. That changes now. Welcome to The Shift, babe. This is The Purpose Show. The Purpose Show podcast is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other awesome shows like this one. Hello, my amazing tribe of women. It is officially time for a huge, massive announcement. We have been building to this and it's time. So over the past 7-8 years, it has been an absolute privilege and passion of mine to serve and empower women like you through Ali Casaza, the brand, and all of my courses that have been housed underneath that brand. You guys have this determination and thirst for growth that has always inspired me to continuously expand my own knowledge and to pour that into my offerings in this business. Together, we have achieved so many incredible milestones. We have created 20 transformative courses. We have done work with over 100 private clients and guiding you and more than 35,000 students on their personal growth journeys. It's so amazing what has happened in these past years. But honestly, I believe there is so much more that we can do together. What has been built is just not big enough to hold where I believe we're headed. Your desires, your dreams, your goals, your aspirations, they are at the heart of every single thing I do. It fuels my own. And that is why I have been taking the time to declutter my business the way I teach you guys to declutter your homes and just create space for a fresh approach that truly nurtures and elevates our growth, our learning, and our communication and our community in a way that the old model just cannot. I know that you are ready to keep going, ready to receive support so that you can elevate in your life. And I am now officially prepared to deliver that for you. And I am so freaking excited. I have been like stuck on what's next for the past 18 months or so. And it has been rough. Oh my God. Like I've just been really in this and trying to figure out, trying to be open for the download of like what to do next, because just I want to give you an experience that goes beyond all the limitations of the traditional course online program model. And what I've figured out is transformation is just, it's simply not like a one size fits all journey. It's raw, it's imperfect, it's pretty chaotic, and it's always evolving. And that's what this new platform that I'm about to tell you about is all about. It is about embracing this evolution, always becoming her, always becoming, you know, truly the highest version of ourselves and creating space where we can all do that together and always be growing and adding new things in a way that the course model just didn't let me. I have this relentless pursuit in me, this relentless pursuit of happiness and excellence that has led me to seek out all kinds of learnings and certifications, to devour books and immerse myself in all kinds of different programs to learn and grow, all to make sure that my coaching skills are honed to perfection for you. I want you to know how much I love you all and how committed I am to staying at the forefront of my coaching expertise. I want to provide you with the absolute best guidance on your journeys. So this is me inviting you into the next level of doing life together.
I am here to be your guide, your confidant, and the catalyst for your personal metamorphosis. This new space I've created is a sanctuary for those of you who refuse to settle, refuse to stay stuck or stagnant, who desire to grow, who desire positive changes that don't feel overwhelming to take on, and most of all, who want freeing personal transformation. This is a space where all of that can happen, and it can happen with ease and with enjoyment. So, I know you're ready. I know you're ready to break free from the confines of your past and what you've been through and who you've been, to step into your power, to embrace this journey of self-discovery that we've been on together like never before. And that's who I'm here for. This new era of transformative coaching is all about you, your dreams, your goals, and your fulfillment. So let's do this journey together. Introducing the Becoming Her Collective. Welcome to a place where your desires are honored, you have space to know, love, and accept yourself, and where you have the support and tools from me to practically create the life you truly want and have always deserved. I am so thrilled to be by your side in this. This is huge. This is a huge shift. My love, this exists purely for your growth, for your empowerment, and the amazing person that you are and are becoming. This is the shift, my friend. Go get all the details and soak it up. AliCasaza.com/collective. You get to choose your own pricing, and whatever you choose, you get grandfathered in at. So this is going, you guys know me, I am always evolving, always growing, always adding, and I always increase pricing to make sure there is a positive energy exchange and an equal energy exchange between what I am delivering and people who are coming on board and wanting to be a part of receiving that from me. So the price is always going to be increasing accordingly. Get in now, be a part of this with me at the ground level. This is huge. We are going to grow this thing so big and so beautiful. Come join now, snag whatever price feels good to you and get grandfathered into that. Be a part of this from the very beginning. I love you guys so much. I am so freaking excited and so thankful for every single one of you who are taking me up on this, getting in, joining me and building this new castle in this big empire, this movement that I want to create with you that empowers and supports women in every area of their lives. This has gone so much further than decluttering. It's so incredible. AliCasaza.com/collective. Hello, gorgeous. We are going to be enjoying an incredibly deep, raw, and beautiful conversation with Nicole Christie. Nicole is actually someone that she reached out to me to have me on her podcast, and we hopped on a Zoom call and we're just kind of being really open and vulnerable with each other and just sharing about life and topics that might support her listeners. And we ended up just really connecting on a level that was so deep. I kind of found myself like resisting and pulling back. I've shared before here on the podcast, like some just issues with other women that I've had in my life. And so being really close to other women just is difficult for me sometimes, but she has been so warm. She's just one of those people that makes you feel really safe and really seen. Like there is not a lick of judgment, and she just holds space for you as cliche as that sounds, it is so true. This woman has become a dear friend. We ended up doing a podcast swap. So I have an interview on her show that was really a big deal for me. I was able to open up about things and share things that I had not talked about before and share about things that I have shared before, but just in a different way because she just makes you feel so safe. It just brings it out of you. Nicole Christie is incredible. She is a writer, a podcaster, an entrepreneur. She's a CEO. She's the host of the Here For Me podcast, which is the one that I did an interview with her on. And now she's here to be on my show. And we had such an in-depth conversation. She's such a good storyteller. I know storytelling is her passion, but she is just such a good storyteller and such an open book. We ended up having a lengthy conversation that I split into two episodes. So you are now listening to part one. Please enjoy, and then we will be having part two come out in just a couple of days if you're listening to this live. So enjoy this conversation. Please do not forget to take a screenshot. Tag me on Instagram. Tag Nicole. If you can find her on Instagram, that would be incredible. I'll link to her Instagram in show notes, but I believe it's just at Nicole J. Christie. That's with an IE at the end of Christie. We really want to just draw attention to this incredible conversation, this incredible woman, and grow both of our podcasts, right? That's what we're all about, creating this free content to support you guys and getting support in return with those shares helps us so much. Thank you guys. I love you all so much. Enjoy this conversation. Hello, my friend.
Hello, Allie. Thank you so much for having me. It is such a joy.
I am so excited. You have an incredible story. You have an incredibly perfect for becoming her story. So I just want to dive into your becoming her journey. Something that you said when we spoke before we actually recorded was you have the story of like your tower moment. Let's just start with that. Could you explain what that means and what it was for you?
Sure. So it's a term that I borrow from the tarot. I'm a pretty spiritual person and I find it a great tool for reflection. So tower moment, the tower card in tarot is generally significant of something in your life crumbling. And a lot of times it's like everything falls apart at once, or you have like a major thing. It could be, you know, an illness, a death, a divorce, a job loss, any of that, that really gives you an opportunity to rebuild and rise from the ashes, if you think of that metaphor. And so, yeah, my tower moment started in June of 2019. So for a little bit of context, my now ex-husband, so there's a little spoiler for you, but it doesn't ruin the whole story. My now ex-husband and I had been in a long-distance relationship and marriage. He was in Montreal. I was in Seattle for 7.5 years. Trying to get back to the States. He has a job that, you know, is quite lucrative at where he was in Montreal, and it took some time to get back. So we were about to move together to San Diego. And a week before that move happened, I got hand, foot, and mouth disease. No one knows how I got that. I know you have four kids.
Worse.
Oh God. I hadn't been around children. I don't have children. Nobody knows how I got it. But you know, I'm hearing from everyone I know and doctors, it's self-limiting. It'll go away in about a week, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, you'll lose some skin. You might lose a couple of fingernails. That's part of the thing. But I was so stressed out. I was working at Microsoft at the time. My job was super stressful in communications there. Great job, but just, you know, a lot going on in a very intense environment in tech. I was coordinating this international move. I was in a memoir writing program, 9-month program at the end of that, finishing my manuscript, about to do my graduation reading. It was so much at once. And my immune system went haywire. And I had a stress-induced autoimmune response, and it attacked itself while it was trying to heal from this virus. And I ended up developing a secondary condition called erythema multiforme, which just looks like target-shaped lesions all over your body, big, giant, painful blisters. And it kept getting worse and worse. It got turned away from the ER twice. And the third time, it was so bad, they said, we have to admit you, because it had started to eat into the connective tissue. So I couldn't really use my hands. I couldn't walk. I couldn't get a shoe on one of my feet because of all the swelling. My C-reactive protein was 3 times the normal level. And I couldn't eat. My mouth was full of these sores. I couldn't eat. I couldn't drink. I'd lost like 8 pounds in a week. And they were like, we need you on hydration, meds, nutrients, everything. So we're admitting you to the hospital, which they thought would just be for a night or two. I ended up staying there for 7 days. And I kept saying, I'm moving. It was 8 days from the day I was admitted. I'm moving in 8 days. And I was released from the hospital the day before we had to move. I was not well enough to go with my then husband. So he moved by himself. I was sent to my parents' house in Oregon. They were there in the hospital with me and my husband. And they're like, you're rehabilitating her, because my skin had started to come off in sheets. I was like peeling skin off my hands like gloves, peeling it off my skin like no-show socks. And then all 10 of my toenails turned black and popped off. Nothing happened to my fingernails. I don't know why. But they sent me there to basically rehabilitate because it wasn't safe for me to travel. They're like, with all these open sores, you're going to get staph and die. And they told me when they discharged me, there was a 15% chance you were going to die anyways because you were going septic. So by the way, and they were like, we didn't want to scare you, but now that we're discharging you, and my husband was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Okay. Like, all right. So, you know, I have a walker for weeks because I can't walk. It's so painful. Finally, this was mid-June of 2019. Finally, July 1st, I was healed enough. I looked terrible for 9 months while this fully healed, but and it took 2 years for my toenails to grow back, but I was healed enough to get on a plane and come to San Diego. So that was the first part of this tower moment when I realized what can I get from this? You and I are similar. Like, what do I need to learn from this experience? Shit happens. And I have a couple of friends who are healers who said, you know, the skin is the ultimate boundary. It's your body's ultimate boundary. Do you think it might have been telling you something? And I realized I was not setting good boundaries with people. I was people pleasing. I was making sure everyone's needs were met. Mine were not. So that was my lesson from that. And I started to move towards that and get better about it. But I still wasn't really showing up for myself. I was still abandoning myself. And I wasn't really seeing clearly what was going on outside of me in my life. Mm-hmm. So the next, by the time, you know, I get well enough, it's March of 2020. And I'm like, okay, I'm here in San Diego. I can go out and I can, you know, meet people. I can go back to Pilates. I look kind of normal again.
I look kind of normal again.
I can walk. I'm excited. I'm going to make friends. March 2020, the lockdown happens across the country here in California. And my eye is watering and I go into the bathroom and I look in the mirror and there's a lesion on the inside of my lower eyelid, on the inner corner of my lower left eyelid. And I'm like, what in the hell is that? But no one can see me because it's COVID. So unless you have COVID or you're having a heart attack, no one's going to see you for lesion in your eye. So I didn't get to see anyone until July of 2020. This thing is growing out of control. So I get to a surgeon who hacks this thing off in a really egregious way and sends it off to pathology and says, it's probably an 80% chance it's nothing. It's like a benign papilloma. 20% chance it's cancer. 5% chance that it's this particular kind of cancer. And I'm like, oh, 80%, we're good. This is fine. I'm just going to heal. We're going to move on. I find out it is indeed ocular cancer. And I need to see an ocular oncologist. There are 300 in the world and none in San Diego. So I end up finding one in LA at USC Roski, who was wonderful. And it's a month before I can get in to see her. So I go in to see her in August of 2020. She confirms that's what it is. We have to operate. She operates within 1 week, like the next week she operated. And she's like, so the next piece of it is you can have a really radical surgery. We'll remove all of this cancer. And she told me, she goes, it wasn't just the part that the doctor removed. You actually have cancer wrapped around your tear duct. Which is an interesting metaphor if you think about what our tear ducts.
If you don't mind me asking, which side of your body?
Left. The feminine side.
So the
side.
Feminine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And being, you know, as you are kind of a woo-woo metaphysical person, I, you know, in addition to the skin being the body's ultimate boundary, I was looking up what is the meaning of the left eye. And we know the eyes are the windows to the soul. In some cultures, they believe the left eye is really the window to the soul. So I was like, huh, I feel like maybe my window's kind of murky, like in terms of who I am and how I'm showing up in the world and also how I'm taking in information, how I'm seeing or not seeing things that are going on around me. So all of this is in my brain. I have, she says, we can have this radical surgery where we cut it out, but you won't look like yourself. So option B is we can incisional biopsy, scoop as much of it out, and then you'll go through immunotherapy, which I call chemo light. It was not like an infusion of chemo for hours and hours, which is devastating. Many people go through that. So I felt fortunate that I didn't have to do that. But it's, you know, every month, a 5-hour appointment, MRIs, scans, pictures, clinical, they're poking you and ending with an injection straight into my eye of interferon. Which is not a fun process. But again, I felt like fortunate I didn't have to go in for infusions. So I have this surgery September of 2020. The next month, these monthly injections start. Mm-hmm. And I get to the end of this journey in February of 2021. I'm now, the first few are fine. And then they start, you start experiencing side effects and getting sick and all of that. So that had started happening and they compound with everyone. So February of 2021, I think I'm graduating. I bring scones for the fucking medical team. Like, woo, I've been going to the San Marino Cafe. Props to the San Marino Cafe and getting these great scones, sharing with you all. It's been a journey. And they're like, your MRI has come back with suspicious tissue, which I had seen that in 1 month between January and February's treatment, something had grown back. And they end up, you know, doing another operation and saying, your cancer is back. It is very aggressive. This kind of cancer is not typically, it's very local. It's rare for it to metastasize, but it's very locally aggressive. And she's telling me this at the February appointment before I had the surgery. And she said, I need to operate within 7 to 10 days to save your eye and potentially your life because it's bad. And what they're worried about, even though it's very rare, is with conjunctival cancer, which is what I had, it is, you know, mucous membrane. They're worried it's going to go to the back of the eye, into the brain and into your head and neck lymph nodes. So CAT scans and MRIs are part of my life now. Mm-hmm. So I go through all of that and I'm thinking about what am I not seeing clearly? And I realize I'm actually, and have been for a long time, in an abusive marriage. I have been emotionally and verbally abused. It escalated during this experience. When you really need your partner by your side, I was experiencing the opposite. It was pretty aggressive at the end there in February. And so I knew at that moment, I was like, things have to change. But you have to get through this cancer journey first. You have to get well. We don't know what we're going to find out beyond this appointment. We didn't know right away. Is it back? Is it not back? So I'm looking at that going, okay, I need to get out of this, but I don't know when I'm going to be well enough to do it. Mm-hmm. So I have this radical, I end up finding out the cancer is back and the doctor says, guess what? You get to go have this radical surgery where they removed the entire lower half of it of my eyelid and rebuilt my whole tear duct. I have a great oculoplastic surgeon at UCSD in San Diego. So it was also able to be done at home. I'm based in San Diego, but I have this radical surgery. They cut out all the cancer, rebuild my eye. And in June of 2021, they finally say to me, you are cancer free. And I think, okay, now what? And I had a very small circle of friends who knew what was happening in my life and in my marriage. And this had been happening, you know, our relationship had unfolded this way, but I'd always explained or chalked it up to external circumstances. It's hard to be long distance. We're in two different countries. And then for, you know, that to continue when we live under the same roof, the pandemic obviously adds so much pressure as it did for everybody. And then you add the cancer on top of it and it gets worse and worse. And I remember thinking to myself, if this is how someone treats the person that they supposedly love more than anyone in the world, I cannot grow old with that person. This is, I need you while I have cancer. It's like that cliche. If I got cancer, would this person be here for me? And I'm like, I actually experienced the thing that everyone fears when they ask themselves that question.
Yeah, it's not a cliche anymore. This is my reality and it's not good. It's not going well.
Yeah. And started working with a therapist who specializes in narcissistic abuse. She could not make a diagnosis, right, of him, but she said the behavior you're experiencing is consistent with that. So, she said to me, what you are describing is emotional and verbal abuse and it's not okay. And so what we need to do, this is now April of 21. I had two surgeries that month, including, you know, that last one where they rebuilt my eye. I work with her for 10 months on building an emotional toolbox. How do I either stay in this relationship and manage to get my needs met and thrive to the best of my ability, or, and she said, it's not my decision to tell you to stay or go. If I leave, how do I build the toolbox so that I can leave safely? And I mean emotional safety, and move on with my life. So I worked with her for 10 months to do that. So we get to June 2021. Again, they're like, you're cancer free. And all my friends, you know, again, the small group of them that knew what was going on, were like, okay, you're cancer free. Are you going to leave? It's ready. And I was like, no, I need to stick my head in the sand. I've had two summers. I lost to the skin thing in 2019, cancer in 2020, is now 2021. I just need to like pretend that my life is okay. And I need to think about what the next intentional thing is, because it had also occurred to me that it was time. I was working at Microsoft. I'd had a chapter at Microsoft. I had my own business 12 years. And then I've been back at Microsoft 4 years, picked up some new skill sets as a storyteller. And I was like, I think it's time to go back out on my own. So I took the summer of 2021 to really intentionally think about what feels nurturing, and leaving the marriage made me want to collapse. The thought of that is like, I don't have the strength. And my therapist said, the fight that will be ahead of you when you do that, you have to be strong enough. And right now you're crawling out on your hands and knees because you just went through this cancer battle. So you need to do this if you, and then she was, it's not my decision to tell you to stay or go. But if you want to go, you have to do it when you have the strength, emotionally, physically, everything. But I did feel like, I think it's time to leave Microsoft. And that feels nourishing and nurturing and good. I think it's time to leave Microsoft and start my own business again. So I thought about it all summer, 2021. And then October of 2021 was like, okay, I'm going to go. Turned in my notice, picked up two clients from Microsoft right away. I decided I was going to take 3 months off and not start until 1/11/22, angel numbers. And so I told people I'm not going to start until January. So I hope you're okay with that. Started the business. Again, the back of my mind, I'm like, when am I going to feel ready to leave this marriage? And in January 2022, I start the business. It's great. I'm having a great time with my clients. I'm doing storytelling in all the different forums, podcasting, video, writing, and tell my therapist, it's been 10 months and I feel like I've got the emotional toolbox, but now I need to go away and integrate. And she said, I support you on that. And I didn't know when it was going to be time. I was just letting my body inform me of that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'm like, okay, it's 2 years into COVID. It's now March of 2022. My Pilates studio is back. I'm healthy again. I got through this skin thing. I got through my eye cancer. It's time to go back and build my physical strength. And I went back to my studio and I do like, you know, really hardcore reformer Pilates. And I went to my teacher and I said, I need you to kick my ass into the best shape I've ever been because my external reality needs to match my internal. I feel a backbone of titanium, a strength, a belief in myself, a sense of self-worth I've never had, but I need that reflected in my physical reality. So I worked on that. And again, no idea. When am I going to feel ready to go? I don't know. Ultimately, it was 6 months. So, you know, I have this realization in February of 2021, something very egregious happened between my now ex-husband and I when I was like, I can't stay here. It's not safe emotionally. I'm going to die. Also, my body is talking to me. How many more times does my body need to talk to me before I realize my life is not in alignment? But yeah, so, you know, it's February 2021 until September of 2022. And I realize it is time to go. And I informed him that our marriage was over. I was leaving. There were many attempts to pull me back, which is not inconsistent with narcissistic abuse. And I stood so firm and strong. Like, I'm doing this because it's the end of an era, because it's hard to let go, because I am sad, even though I know it's the right thing.
Sure.
But I cannot be reeled back. This is not reeling me back. But that was, I mean, I literally looked at the sky and I just went, yeah, this is real. This change is literally in my body. There is nothing. I am choosing myself. I feel sad, but I don't feel guilty. I don't feel like I need to stay. I know that it is time for me to walk forward and choose myself and become who I am meant to be.
Oh my God. Friend, I'm like wrapped up in this story. I forgot I was like in
the game. I forgot. Those are the best podcasts.
Right? Oh my God. This is so intense. Okay. Can you walk us through how did you stay? Like, what practices did you have to like be able to sustain that abuse? And did you feel like, just walk us through what that felt like? Because mm-hmm. I have not experienced that, but I am just wondering like, well, how did you deal? How did you cope?
Like all the whole 10 years we were together or just once?
No,
I realized.
You knew. Me, I feel like that's like, once I know something, I have to act on it right away.
Yeah.
But to know that it's not time for mm-hmm. so long, I'm just curious how you dealt with that.
I think in a lot of ways, I literally dissociated, which I don't know that I recommend that, but it was almost like it was a protective mechanism. I knew what I was doing. I was like, okay, I'm working with this therapist. I think that I knew that I needed to go on a journey to choose myself. And I almost kind of had to dissociate from what I knew was my reality to some degree. Mm-hmm. I also so badly wanted to feel joy. After I got through that cancer journey, you know, my friends were like, okay. And I said, leaving doesn't feel nourishing right now. As hard as that was to explain to other people, I was like, you guys have to understand, I need a proper summer. And I almost need to just pretend that this is okay. And, you know, it's not bad 100% of the time when anyone's in an abusive relationship. So I kind of was like, let's lean into all the goodness. You know, we went to Palm Springs a couple of times and we're having fun together. And I just went, lean into the little bit of joy that you're getting. And an analogy that my therapist when I was living in Seattle taught me is the analogy of a chain link fence. And she said, you need to learn to put up a chain link fence where you can reach through and connect in ways that are nourishing while protecting yourself. Mm. And the metaphor she used was, she said, I have a dog and we live in a corner lot and my dog loves to interact with all the dogs that walk by and all the humans, but I need to protect her from getting into a fight with another dog or running out into the street. If I put up a wood fence, my dog just is protected but doesn't get any of the joy. If I put up a chain link fence, she can be petted, she can, you know, touch noses with the other dog and they can like have little kisses. And that was the analogy that I was using in my head. I have a chain link fence up. I have the emotional toolbox to protect myself because my therapist said, some people who are experiencing narcissistic abuse cannot leave. They have children. It's a financial. So she said, I teach them, how do you get your needs met and thrive to the best of your ability in the relationship while you figure out what it is you want to do? I knew that I wanted to leave, but I was just like, I'm just going to lean in, put my hands to the chain link fence, lean into the good stuff while protecting myself from the bad and constantly checking in of like, when is it going to be time? And there was part of me that also, like, we had some, you know, hard conversations, some sort of coming to Jesus meetings, as I would call them, and recommitted to each other. That happened in March of 2022. And that was the last one. You know, it didn't pan out over the next 6 months. Again, I had no timeline on it, but I just went within, took good care of myself, set boundaries. Disengaging with him was the biggest thing my therapist taught me. Do not engage when he's baiting you to have a fight, to have an argument. Do not engage. Hang up the phone, don't answer the text, walk out of the room, walk out of the house if you are able to, which isn't always possible. So I just enacted that toolbox. And it, like I said, it was almost like a little bit of a dissociation, but it was a protective one. And I was aware of what I was doing. It's like, I see this and I also see that I can be in this relationship and thrive until I feel like I am fully strong enough inside and outside to walk away.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that because I think that's the reality for many women is that they just literally cannot leave or they just know it's not time. One of their children is going through something medically or difficult. Like, I appreciate you sharing that. So I would imagine that upon leaving this marriage, you've gone through all the health shit, the marriage shit, all of it. What did you feel like your first night alone?
After he moved out?
Yes. I don't know why, but I'm just pulled to ask you about that.
It's a really great question. And it's an interesting time. So we split up in September of 2022, last September. And it was a week of conversations. And then I actually had to have my final eye surgery the following week, which was just a minor correcting some side effects. It wasn't a big deal. So it was like we had to, okay, we're breaking up, we're divorcing, but we just got to park that while I get through this. And then the whole month of October, we were ships in the night and just traveling. And so he decided he would move out. He wasn't able to do that through the month of October, but we weren't together. I was out of town, then I'd come back, he was gone. So he didn't move out until November. I was out of town on a work trip. And said, you know, why don't you move out while I'm out? And I came back to a house with no bedroom furniture. That was one of the things he had taken. He had custody of our cats. We had agreed on that when we got them. We'd gotten them earlier in the year. And I'd said, what if something happens between us? Or what happens? We also had a plan. What if something, God forbid, happens to both of us? So no cats, no bedroom furniture, no husband, empty house for the first time. I'd had my house cleaners come and do a move-in, move-out clean. So I was like, okay, I just want to walk in and have it be as normal. And I walked in and the first thing I felt was elation. I was literally listening to NSYNC, Bye Bye Bye, and dancing. That was my first feeling.
I literally
put it on. And I was doing the, like, you know, the Ted Lasso. Yeah. Like, I was 100% doing that in my house. And then I put it on shuffle while I was unpacking and settling back into home. And Kings of Leon Walls came on. And I fell onto the blow-up mattress that I had borrowed because my bed, I'd ordered all new bedroom furniture that was coming like a few days after I got back from this trip. So I was sleeping on my friend's air mattress in my bedroom. When Kings of Leon Walls came on, I fell, and the sun was setting. We have a beautiful view of the sunset from where we live in, or where I've lived now in San Diego. I fell onto that mattress and I sobbed. for 2 hours nonstop. And I vacillated between that for the next 5 days. Day, you know, there would be a day where I was like, or an hour where I was just completely like relief, excitement, hope for the future, and then devastation, fear. You know, we hadn't filed yet. I was like, oh my God, just overwhelmed by how much of the logistics. You know this well. Oh my God, how are we going to do this? And that went on. So it was, this was mid-November. For 5 days, I scrubbed this whole place, you know, basically like toothbrush scrubbing, purged, gave things away, recycled, made this space my own. I bought a selenite lamp. I was like, just trying to clear the energy and make this my space and make it nourishing. I spent 5 days doing that before I went to Oregon to spend Thanksgiving with my family. It was a complete vacillation. And one of the things I talked about in season two, episode one, the episode's called All Signs Point to Healing. It's one of my solo episodes. I told the story of this journey and how from mid-November until the end of January, I'm a big music girl from Seattle, rock and roll girl, Seattle bands. I had music through headphones almost 20 hours a day. I couldn't work. I couldn't, it was a slow time in my business, is always slow anyways, but it's like working, sleeping. I would, I had so much energy, and I realized that's when I had been with an energy vampire for a decade. You know, to just use that term. I didn't know that for a long time. I just thought it was how I was grieving, which it was how I was grieving. But when I look back on that, and also, you know, all the hard charging rock music, which I love and is my lifeblood anyways, was helping me discharge anger. And also I was just filled with energy because I'd been giving it to somebody else for so long. And that literally went on from mid-November until the end of January. And it sometimes still happens. I will go through phases and I think, uh-oh, okay, we're having a thing again. This is the cycle of grief and it's the cycle of healing. You and I have talked about that. It's not linear. You have moments. And I try to just stop and go, what do you need to unpack right now? What's coming up? Why are you not able to go to bed until 2 o'clock? What is happening to you? So that was how I experienced that time. And that first week when he was gone was really epic.
It's like someone had been siphoning your energy. And you cut off the source, like you cut it off from the source, and you—it's like your body and mind didn't know what to do. They're like, "Oh, this is who I am. I got to catch up. I'm so energized."
That's exactly it. It was catching up, and that music, you know, like from Seattle's, like Pearl Jam, Foo Fighters. My ex-husband didn't like that music, and so I was really never allowed to play it. If I listened, it had to be in the car, maybe have my AirPods in. So I had been disconnected from that, except when we were long distance. Obviously, I would spend like a month in Montreal and a month in Seattle. And those months when I was in Seattle, I would really fill my cup with like my friends and clients and my home and music. And then I would go to Montreal and be in his world and I would get drained. I mean, I would just be a shell of myself when I'd come back. So I did that for basically 7.5 years. It was this return to, oh, right, this is who I, like you said, this is who I am. This is that woman. And I just couldn't get enough of it. I literally worried about my mental health. I was like, what is happening? I feel like this is mania. It felt like hypomania, but you know, I'm reading a lot about what is disenfranchised grief or complicated grief. I was like, that's what we're going through. And then it really truly was, I have so much energy and so much of a charge. The thing was like, most of the time I wasn't sad. I was actually really happy. I more grieved the fact that I'd abandoned myself with him. That part of it was hard. And digging that woman up from the shallow grave that I buried her in for 10 years and going, sis, I'm going to tell you what happened for the last 10 years. An almost emotional thing is that was the part that I grieved more than anything, more than the relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you about that. Like, if it was like, I mean, do you feel like there was any grief for like what could have been?
Yeah, I think part of the, and this is probably a survival mechanism in this kind of a relationship. There was a grief for what I thought the relationship was, which also kind of represents what it could have been, what I thought it, I didn't see clearly. And the metaphor again of my eye, literally my eye was opened. They cut half of my eyelid and all of my tear duct out. So I had this big black chunk. That's what it looked like, a big rectangle. That's what it looked like in the pictures of the defect that they took while I was in surgery. I was not seeing what was happening. I was stuck in that reality of like, this is what should be happening. This is my partner. We are married. It's like my brain literally dissociated so that I didn't even see the difference between what goes on every day and what you think should be happening. It was like I was lost in a fantasy. And I realized through my therapy that I was in love with the idea of him and the idea of what that relationship could be, mm-hmm. to the point where I couldn't even see it for almost a decade.
All right, my friends, I like to keep my episodes fairly short just because mom life and attention spans and lots going on. And I know for me in my brain, when I see an episode is like over 30 something minutes, I'm like, oh God, I don't know if I can do this. So we are stopping here and we are going to be releasing part two of this conversation in just a couple of days if you're listening to this live. So go snag part two, releasing in a couple days. If this is not something that you're listening to at the time that we're releasing, you can just hop on over and go listen to part two right now. Love you guys so much. Thank you for being here with us. Friend, thank you so much for hanging out with me and letting me be a part of your day. It means so much to me. If you would like more like behind the scenes view into my life, this lifestyle, regular like life hacks, tips, and more content that's really gonna create lightness in your social media feed, follow me on Instagram at Ali_that's_me, or you can just search Ali Casaza and it's the one with the blue check mark. If this episode or any episodes was helpful for you, please consider leaving me a review on Apple Podcasts. It is literally the lifeblood for a podcaster and it helps me so much. Thank you for tuning in. If you would like to learn more from me, how I can help you, how you can implement the things we talk about here on The Purpose Show, leaning more into making life simpler, better, and more abundant in the best ways, head to alicasaza.com. There are free downloads, online programs, and other resources to help you create the life you really want in a very deep dive style. I am always rooting for you, friend. I will see you next time. I'm Ali Casaza, and this is The Purpose Show.